I'm speaking with Nicholas, who is an anarchist activist here in Quebec and also an organizer with the
Comité Populaire Saint-Jean-Baptiste.
Can you talk a little bit about the fear campaign that was being spread about by the government of Quebec and Canada in advance of the demonstrations against the FTAA? How you responded to that in your Saint-Jean community, what you did?
Well, the fear campaign started like in July with articles about the summit slowly coming in, saying like, you know, there will be the summit of the Americas, and starting with like security measures. Like I remember like front page news article about how the airport was too small, how they would need like, and other will need like lots of security measures because of Seattle and things like that. And it was like totally crazy news articles like this past summer, like saying, for example, I remember a front page like saying like firefighter doesn't have a formation to deal with sarin, you know, the gas they use in Japan.
Yes.
And you know, for the summit, and like they were talking about terrorism and all that stuff. And when we talked, analyzing Windsor, which happened in June, which was kind of rehearsal of Quebec City, we talked about like how there would be a massive police operation in the neighborhood, because we knew that the summit will happen in Saint-Jean-Baptiste, because the Congress Center, the Convention Center, is in the neighborhood. And most of the hotel are just like near. And so we talked about that, and everyone was like, you're crazy. And, like, there won't be any fence or anything. Like, there won't be like thousands of cops here and, you know, that kind of stuff. But then it goes like slowly to be affirmed. And we learned in November, like on November 2nd, the police did a huge press conference saying, we're going to have a fence. We're going to empty the jail, we're going to empty the hospitals around, we're going to have 5,000 cops, and they say, si vis pace parabellum, if you want peace, prepare for war, and they were talking about all that, and afterward, it continued to build up with crazy things like people saying we were bringing explosives to Quebec City and things like that. And, well, what we did is that we started a campaign against the security measures, saying they were an overkill, an overblown, and they were attacking basic civil rights that were guaranteed by the Constitution. We attacked them on the civil rights and on the fact that it was an overblown, and on the fact that they weren't really interested into security. We said, like, if they wanted to deal with security, that's one thing, but they're interested with their image, because what we said is that if they build up the fence and everything, like, it's not because they fear of looting or violence or anything, because it will just build up more violence than anything. It's the image, and also we attack them on the fact that the civil rights and everything. So we build up that campaign. We print out a leaflet. We also did front page articles from our newspapers, and we ask everyone interested to work with that to come with us. And so we had people from CASA, people from Occupé, people from the Comité Populaire. We have meeting with like 50 people. It was like really amazing. And so we print out a leaflet, distributed like 5,000 copies in the neighborhood. And we had a public assembly with 150 people, and then a demo with 400 people like saying, and we basically say like, we don't think there will be looting, and we don't think there will be like lots of violence, senseless violence, and we just like urge people to not be afraid with that. And at the same time, we arrest the authority. We came to all of the city hall meeting the city council meeting.
City council.
And we jammed our question period every time, and we get to every public assembly of the authorities and everything, and we were like lots in the media, and we get a few arrests, and we dealt with that publicly, and we also like made it public that we're harassing activists and everything. So I think we basically put them into a defensive position.
Okay, let me try to clarify some things for people who are not familiar with Quebec. Now, I'd like to ask you a bit about the community of Saint-Jean-Baptiste, because this community was cut in half by this fence, this security mm-hmm. fence, right? And the people in the community inside the fence were put on a pass system similar to apartheid mm-hmm. South Africa. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, the size of the community, who lives there, how this fence was split, and how this was going to affect the people in the community?
Okay, there's about like 9,000 to 12,000 people living in Saint-Jean-Baptiste. And at the beginning, it was supposed to be like 3,000 to 4,000 people the other side of the fence, but it was reduced drastically. And was like much less people than it was supposed to be. It was a few hundred people from the neighborhood in the fence, and a few hundred on the other neighborhood, which is Le Vieux-Québec, which there's like 3,000 people living there, mostly like petit bourgeois. In Saint-Jean-Baptiste, like the community is like, there's about like 60% of the people live with less than $20,000 a year Canadian, and there's a third of the population single moms, and most of them, like there's about like 50 or 40% of the people that are below the poverty line, but at the same time there's about 40% of the people with a university degree. But at the same time, you must know that in Quebec, there's much more people going to university since the fees are much lower, like $1,000 a year. So that's it. It's poor, but I'm educated, so it's a bit different than the other like working class neighborhood around town, which are poor and low educated. And the part of the neighborhood that is in the fence is basically a part of the neighborhood that has a long history of resistance. Like those houses were supposed to be destroyed in the 70s, and they're now like housing co-op for like 20 years or something. We were born there. It's like it's our place forte. Mm. How do you call that? That's our strong point. It's one of our strongholds in the neighborhood, like the place they put under the fence, like that's where we were born. So that's it. Lots of people like really pissed off, and the people are generally like more liberal than elsewhere. Not a lot, but a little bit, So we did basically a lot of agitation, and last weekend we published a special issue of a newspaper about the FTA, the summit, everything, and plus a couple of other articles about housing and things like that, like Lake Kenyap, like the whole issues with welfare reform, with social housing, with healthcare, things like that. And
now, social housing, by that, do you mean public housing, government, funded housing? Is that what you mean by social housing?
Yes and no. It's a little bit more complicated than that here. Like, there's three type of social housing. There's the government subsidized social housing, where people pay less than 25% of their income a month for rent. There's housing co-op, which are self-managed collective that owns a house that is subsidized by the government, but they're autonomous. And there's what we call OSBL, which are like things that are run by community groups, but that are not under state control, but are not either under tenants control. So we're basically talking about co-op, mm-hmm. which are house owned by the people living in them, but it's owned by the collective entity, not the people living in them. It's basically like housing where people pay less than in the average. Yeah, so we published that newspaper. We distribute like, we print out 9,000 copies with a special Casa 4-page in it. And we did distribute like 8,500 copies uptown. We did much more than our traditional base. Usually we distribute like 4,000 to 5,000 there, but we go on both sides. We just go further away mm-hmm. on both sides, and we did like the whole uptown area with that, like seeing like what a black block is. Also calling people to go on Saint-Jean. We finally decided at the beginning we wanted to support like both action of Occupy and Claquin Casa, but only like support. But finally, as everything built up, we realized that there was a high risk of marginalization and criminalization of Claquin Casa.
Okay, let's explain what Claquin and Casa is, if you could, please. Mm-hmm.
Well, CLAC is the anti-capitalist struggle convergence, which exists for a year or something. And it's a Montreal...
Because of this FTA.
Yeah, it's a Montreal-based activist group based around like anti-authoritarian principles. They've been organizing for a year. They're one of the main organizers, one of the four or five main organizers of the action that happened this weekend. And CASA is kind of their Quebec counterpart. It was formed like 6 months ago by two anarchist groups here. And
those were?
Emile Henry, NIFAC affiliated here, and Le Maquis, which is a local anarchist newspaper. And with lots of more people now, like this, there's like 50, 70 people involved. And it's also, it's a radical, like, anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, like, pro-diversity of tactic and like, you know, the whole list, the whole usual list. And so there's those two radical group, directly democratic group, which huge General Assembly, probably as much activist, if not more, than liberal type group, because liberal type group of more made up of like professional and wage activists, which don't work 24 hour a day, you know, they finish at 9 and they don't work the weekend. So those two groups, because they were organizing around diversity of tactic, were attacked, and there was an attempt to marginalize them by Salami, which are basically a bunch of assholes, and they were banned from Table de Convergence, which was supposed to be the coordinating committee for all the action. Did you hear of them? They're supposed to be the big, massive organization. They were not there, actually. That's where all the unions are, all the NGOs and everything. Finally, they did nothing. And so Salami and ATTAC, which is like a French group for tax on capital. And other groups try to marginalize Claquin Casa and try to forbid groups to work with them. And we feared that there was a high risk of marginalization and criminalization of those two groups because of the principle of diversity of tactic. And so we said we should do more and support them. And at the same time, people in the neighborhood start to ask us, what will happen on A20? Where would you be? And we explained them that we wanted to be in the green zone. We explained the principles like green zone, which are pacifist, like no arrest type of zone, and yellow zone, which are like defensive action and nonviolent direct action, and red zone, which are higher risk of arrest place, which could be nonviolent too, but anyway. And so we explained that to them, and they say like, we would like you to be on Saint-Jean, which is the main street in the neighborhood with all the commerce, the merchant and everything. because we fear of looting, and we fear also of a reactionary backlash. We fear people would just like stay in their house and scare. And so we figured that out, and we decided like 2 weeks ago to organize that huge crane zone in the neighborhood, and we made a front page out of it for a newspaper. And finally we organized that, and it was like literally like thousands of people from the neighborhood who came, and we basically distributed like tons of leaflets and posters in the neighborhood explaining like what the Clack and Casa plan of action was, what we were doing into that, that we were not Clack and Casa, and we're not, well, we're still like what we are, but then we think we should support that, and that we think that we should have a convergence of activists and resident. And I think that's basically what happened.
Okay, now in terms of the merchants that are on Saint-Jean, for those who've not been to Quebec, it might be described almost as a quaint neighborhood. It's very pretty.
What does it mean, quaint?
Quaint, charming, many different brightly painted houses and buildings and different small shops. These shops that are on the Saint-Jean, do these tend to be people who also live in the neighborhood, or are they many people from outside? In dealing with these merchants, is this a different group of people than the neighborhood, or do they somehow fit into the neighborhood as residents as well?
Basically, we've been working with them on some issues, like street parties, animation, things like that. As of, like, I would say that between half and two-thirds of the merchants live in the neighborhood. Most of them just up their place, and they basically live there. Not all of them, but most of them. And most of them also work like 50 hours a week in the place, 50 to 60 hours a week. And yes, being a merchant means usually having different interests on some issues. And for example, when we were distributing the leaflet, all of them take them. They take piles of them. But most of them told us, like, as a resident, I agree with you, but as a merchant, I want to be in the fence, not out of the fence, you know? And that was at the beginning. And they didn't know. And they didn't know who to believe and what was going to happen. And it was like that whole fear campaign and everything. And they were like basically pissed off at the authorities, because the authorities didn't care about them. They put the fence like just in front of their stores, basically. Like you saw it.
We saw that. So it means that the fence is what is going to be the target of the activity in the demonstration. So this puts, instead of protecting these people, this puts their, you know, where they live or where they have their businesses, right at the heart of where the conflict is going to be, right where the tear gas is going to be, right where the police charges, right where the angry demonstrators are going to be.
Yeah, so they were pretty scared, and they were like, and we told them, like, it's not about security, it's about image. And when they realized they were outside the fence, they suddenly realized that maybe we were true. We're saying, like, if it was about security, they would have opened René Lévesque, because it's a huge boulevard. There's nothing to smash there. If the cops really deal with security, that's what they would have done. Not having all those demonstrators on Saint-Jean, which everything could be bricked up. But and at the same time, so we had like weird relation with them. They didn't know who to believe: the activists, the police, the media, whatever. But finally, I think they were so pissed off at all the security measures and everything, and the fact that their voice counted for nothing, that most of them were like pretty cool with demonstrators, and like they were cool, I think. Even if most of them like put up like plywoods, they were placard.
Boarded up.
Like most of the stores were boarded up, but that's fine. We organized like lots of free expression on those billboards, and that was cool too. So, but yeah, so these people are in a hard position because some of them they just cannot afford the few thousand dollars that their classes cost, and we did deal a little bit with them, but when we decided to organize a carnival, we didn't like ask them or anything. We just said like, we are gonna do that. We feel that it's the best way to have it peaceful and to have both the demonstration and a safe place. And so, and we made it pretty clear that we didn't organize that to protect their classes. We organized that so that people could come and have a good time and be safe. So that's one thing. The other thing also that we did that was really appreciated by everyone is that we did a lot of outreach toward protesters to explain to them what a fucking neighborhood was. It's not downtown Seattle. Like, there's people living there, you know, and there's people living in downtown Quebec City. There's almost no multinational. There's some, but there's no big corporation except banks. And most of the stores are not like huge, greedy capitalists or anything. Like, it's like local merchant who, it's still capitalism, of course, but you know, like they work 50 hours a week and everything. And if we smash and loot their place, we're probably gonna help globalization to cut down on local commerce. I'm not defending like local trade, but if you smash these local shop, some of them will have to close down, and it will be replaced not by another local shop, but probably by one of those chains and you know that kind of stuff. So we made like tours of the neighborhood, and we published an history of the neighborhood that was distributed at the consulta, and we made tours of the neighborhood and explained to everyone, including all of the anarchists, what was the neighborhood about and everything. And we did it that so clear that there was a populist right-wing talk show that says that there was a conspiracy between me and the committee and the local merchant association to have like a good place for the neighborhood and where all the local merchants will make tons of money with demonstrators while the rest of the town will be smashed. So that was funny.
How do you think that the neighborhood of Saint-Jean-Baptiste came through? What do you expect people to be saying to you from the neighborhood on Monday morning?
Probably they're gonna probably be really angry at the police because the police just tear gas the whole neighborhood plus two other working class neighborhood. They just like totally fill the air thick with tear gas and the attack like peaceful and less peaceful demonstrators, and they attack local residents, and everyone was affected by that. And the mere fact that most residents were either neutral or in sympathy with the protesters, and lots of local kids and local people get out. I saw lots of local people there. In fact, I think like people would be happy, and there's almost nothing smashed in the neighborhood. There was a few fire burning barricades, and there was like one or two windows that were smashed. There's a lot of graffiti, however, but I think graffiti is like, it's fine. Like they've been talking like for 6 months, a year about like, oh, the whole city will be smashed. Will be like, they were talking about like, oh, in Seattle, like there was like millions of dollars of damage and everything. So now like, you think like a few graffiti is cool. and some of them are really great. Actually, it was like cool graffiti. And I think people will be happy with what happened this weekend. And I think people will just be angry at the police. But that's one thing, like, people downtown are angry at the police, and people in the suburbs will probably be angry at demonstrators.
For people not familiar with Quebec, Sainte-Foy is a suburb of Quebec, upscale and filled with shopping malls and corporate chains. The convergence point for Clac and Casa were, and some accommodations were at the Laval University, which was in that neighborhood. So this is a neighborhood that prior to the summit, didn't they pass special city ordinances trying to discourage demonstrators or harass demonstrators? And what happened there, if you can tell me?
Well, actually, we found out that it's the summit people who get to send for the cops, who get there and said, like, you would help us a lot to pass new laws with that, and that. And for the city hall, it was just a matter of, like, accommodating the police. They didn't thought of anything, like, bad with that. And with the uproar everywhere in Canada, they even received, like, letters from MPs in Vancouver. They were really like, whoa, what's going on? And the Civil Liberties Union treated them with a civil a lawsuit. So they backed down and said, no, it's okay, we won't have that law. So
let me clarify this. You're saying that the police came to the city council, whatever it's called, and asked them to pass special laws directed against repressing the demonstrators.
That's exactly it.
Okay,
that's what the mayor said.
The mayor admitted this.
Yeah, it's an independent city. Sainte-Foy is an independent city. It will be still for 6 months. Or something. It's going to be merged with Quebec. And so the mayor there said they came to us with that. They just said it will render their job easier. And we thought that it was simple. And we didn't realize that it was not constitutional. It was just okay for us. And we didn't think of it.
So, now, what were these laws exactly?
It was about like banning scarf. But what was really weird about it? It was that you didn't have to commit something. The police just have to think that you want to commit something, and also the proof of not wanting to commit something was on your shoulder and not on the shoulder of the police to prove that. And almost anything could have been a weapon. You know, a picket sign could be seen as a weapon. And so it was basically like forbidding everything. It was totally like crazy. And so they banned that. And after that, like, you know, you have to know also that there will be municipal election here in a few months. So the mayor was like, was scared with the big hop and the big like backlash against that. And so she started talking about like how she was against police brutality and police violence, and it never happened in Sainte-Foy, you know. Of course it never happens, it's a bunch of rich citizens. But you know, we have a peaceful police and we don't want to have like brutality and everything, and we understand the right to demonstrate and all that stuff, and so blah blah blah. We never saw them during the summit. They made no comments or anything. And same for Quebec City Mayor. He too, at the beginning, was like happy with the summit and everything was fine and fuck off with the demonstrators and there's a bunch of looters. And then suddenly, like, he changed his mood and finally wanted to have the summit canceled. And he was like really scared, and he was really funny, and he made like comments about like the right to demonstrate and everything. And the 3 weeks before the actual summit were totally crazy. Like, everyone announced like initiative to make sure everything will be peaceful, and the mayor even like opened up like the front of the L'Hôtel de Ville, the city hall, to have like protesters to came in and told them their message, and everyone was happy with that. But the point is that no one got there. There was like 40 people there discussing, and the supposedly mass organization of like Salami and everything, like, yeah, no one there. And at the same time, like, there were like huge fighting with 10,000 people on the other side of the fence. So
from what we saw in the streets, with a massive tear gas, which had to have been going into every person's home.
Yeah.
We expect that the mayor and the other authorities are going to be faced with some very angry citizens in the upcoming weeks. Mm-hmm. Over this. What role will any of the groups that you work in, what role will you take in the aftermath of the summit?
Yeah, we're going to have a General Assembly Monday to see about that. We have a lot of work to do with GEL Solidarity and things like that. And we're going to probably try to see the mood like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, see what's going on downtown. And we might do something because there's like, I don't know, if maybe Casa will do something, but I don't think, unfortunately, Casa has the muscle to do something about that, because unfortunately it's basically a youth group, and that's fine. That's really cool, and we did a huge and great job. But probably it will be more easier with the Comité Popular. There's a citizens' committee in that neighborhood too, in Saint-Sauveur, which is another neighborhood, and there's an ecological group uptown, and we're gonna probably deal that with community groups. It will be much easier to get the population to do something this way than with Casa, which will have their handfuls anyway, and everyone's like really like tired and everything, which is not the case in the citizens committee, because there's a lot of people who are just not burned out. So I don't know what we will do. Like, it depends on the energy, the money, and the mood of the neighborhood. The mood of the neighborhood. But there probably will be a city hall meeting tomorrow or next Monday. I don't know. It's every other Monday. So we're going to probably get there.
One thing that I noticed throughout the course of the summit and the protests is that the protests were very heavily covered by all of the corporate media, both print and electronic. You know, in-depth papers with many, many pages dedicated to photographs and articles. Not all of it... you know, not all of it without some supportive, you know, aspects for the demonstration. Prior to this summit, obviously there has been the issue of NAFTA. People saw the WTO. I'm wondering, at least the people that you deal with in your neighborhood, has there been much of an understanding of the effects of globalization, you know, on their lives up to this point? When you went out, to leaflet with your paper and to talk about the demonstrations, was there already some basic, you know, understanding or sentiment about the whole issue of the neoliberalism and these policies and how they're affecting people's daily lives already in Quebec?
There have been some instinctive rejection of like globalization, you know, like on a basic level, like. But I think, to be fair, there wasn't, and there still is no clear understanding of the effect of NAFTA and FTA. There have been like huge popular education, and people now, at least now, they know what FTA stands for, and I think that people. More people know about it, but there's no general knowing of what's going on. People just don't know why I don't think people know why they demonstrate, and most of the people, like, they've been like huge like campaign of popular education, but I don't think generally like people know a lot about that. and they certainly make almost no links with the cuts in social programs and everything. That's for sure. It's not like in English Canada or the U.S. where there have been like massive popular education about that. It's we first had to educate the activists about the issue and educate ourselves, because frankly, before knowing the Summit of the America would be here, I didn't care about like globalization. I was just like, it just like, it's still capitalism. I don't need to know more, you know. and I didn't give a shit about globalization. I was like, well, this is a fashion, and I still don't think it's that important. Actually, I think I've read a lot about the whole issue, and I know that there's real threat in FTA and that we should oppose that, and that's what I'm doing basically. But at the same time, I mean, globalization is so far away from daily concern, and I have to get back to the ground, and you know, like we have to do much more reports about like why is there welfare reform, where it is linked with globalization, what's the threat, the exact threat to healthcare, what's the threat to public education, what's the threat to public transportation, and things like that, which is not done these days. Like they talk a lot about Chapter 11, but Chapter 11 means nothing to most of the people. When you explain that it's a company that could sue a government, then okay, people understand. But when you go on in a public assembly and say like, and you know, then Chapter 11, we should get down with that, and like people are like, Chapter 11, what is he talking about? You know, and so I think it's a fashion to a certain extent, and I think it's important to understand what are the change in the global capitalist system right now. And I think it's important because it's a change in the balance of forces, and it's a change in the concentration of capital, and it's a change also in where in the class struggle we could put emphasis, and that's important to know and to think about it and everything. But at the same time, as far as I could see, the current anti-capitalism is more anti-corporation than anything else, and there's no global, even in the activists, and I'm talking for the activists, there's no global understanding that capitalism is basically a social relationship based on wage, and it's not like, it's not just Nike, you know. And you know, like people are just like, there's, I've heard like lots of people saying we should attack the capitalists and the corporation, and then for them like the local shop is not capitalism, but it's still capitalism in small scale. So I don't know, like if, like to me, what was important with the summit and with the FTA, for to be frank, it's the first time that I've been to that kind of protest. I don't give a shit usually about that kind of protest. I give a shit about lots of other issues. But to be frank, what was important with the Summit of the Americas is that it was in my town. It was a clear attack of the ruling class on local people. It was clearly an attack on civil rights, and it was clearly a show of arrogance from the ruling class, saying like, we could meet wherever we want, we don't care about you, we're gonna fucking close down your neighborhood, build up a fence in the middle of it, and that's it. And I think that there's almost nothing important happening in those summits. It's basically a question of image. You know, with the end of history type of thinking, it's a way to show the power of the ruling class. It's still an arrogant way of doing things, and I don't know how long they will do it, because they don't need to do it. They're doing it basically to show, we won. We are the most powerful. We won. We are the ruling class. We can meet and do our stuff wherever we want, and we don't care about you. And so that's it. And if it wasn't for, yeah, so I I think it's important to deal with that, but I think what's important for activists in general and anarchists in particular is to get involved in your neighborhood, get involved in your shop, get involved where you're working, where you're studying, and get involved with local issues and things like that. And I think that it's because we've been getting involved with local issues where we work, where we live, where we study, that we could make this happen and get that so powerful. If it wasn't for the unionists, the students, the people involved in all kind of issues and milieu, it wouldn't have been that huge. Like, you know, and you could have built up a social movement without social connection, you know, and I think that's what's important, and we need to find basic permanent day-to-day resistance to this global system. And to do that, as Jaggy said a lot, like, summit is like extreme sport, but even if you do extreme sport, you still need to do your day-to-day jogging. So I think the day-to-day jogging is much more important than the bungee type.
If you don't want to break your legs doing bungee, you better be in good shape.
Now, do you expect to see, following this summit, a lot of new people entering into activism as a result of what they experienced here in Quebec during the summit? One of the comments that we have heard more than once is people saying that they have never seen that level of police brutality before in the city.
I think it will depend on. I think it will depend a lot on the level of police repression. If they don't destroy everything, we will have more people active. There's a lot of people who will just like disappear again, but I think we'll be much stronger afterward. But it depends. We could also be involved into legal support for 2 years, and there could be more activists around, but at the same time, to what use? And it depends on the police clampdown, I think. It really depends on that. And the summit and CASA have enabled us to be in a relationship of struggles with, my God, dozens, if not hundreds, of youths fastly radicalizing. And we've been distributing lots of anarchist literature and everything. But what I'm scared is how all of this would translate, how it will get back to the ground. What kind of activism? Because, you know, the problem is that probably like in the U.S., when you get out of school, the big question is where you go. Where are you active? Because school is fine. There's lots of people. It's easy to mobilize. It's easy to get lots of people, radicals. But after that, where you go? Do you go in the neighborhood? Do you go where you're working? And where you're working full-time in shitty jobs, is it possible to organize there? Is it possible to do something? Sometimes it's not, sometimes it is. Is your union interesting? Some unions are not interesting at all, and it's a waste of time to go there. Some are interesting, and some community organizing are not interesting, and it's a waste of time to go there. It depends what you want to do. But, yeah, so I'm trying to guess like where people will go, and there's only one Comité Populaire, and you know, and it's not necessarily like interesting for everyone. It depends on what type of issue you want to do. But what I hope is that I've never seen a so huge attempt to really reach a population as this time, in Quebec at least. And the last time I saw that was during a student general strike, like trying to reach to the students. And in 1996, but now, like, it was the general population, and there was a real huge attempt to deal with people, and I just hope that we won't stop doing that. Because, like, now, you know, it's urgent. The summit is in 2 weeks. So, well, now it's past, but, you know, and we have to reach people and get them to understand, blah, 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 blah. But when the issue will not be there and we will not be rushed, will we pass from a 10,000 leaflet to back to 150, or what will be the middle of it, you know? One thing about the anarchists, there was a black bloc, which was probably stronger. It was probably the strongest black bloc in Seattle, as far as everything goes. However, it was much more accepted than it was much more accepted than before. People were in general supportive of it, even if some of the action were not like easily swallowing. But this is not all. What's really interesting with the summit is not the black bloc, in my opinion, as far as anarchism goes. The black bloc's fine, but what's interesting to me is for the first time, as far as you could see, for the first time in like really recent history, anarchists and anti-authoritarian revolutionaries were passing past the Cold War syndrome. That is, but the fact is that for the first time, anti-authoritarian and anarchist revolutionaries were not only criticizing, some of them were, but were actually involved into the actual planning, and we did impose our agenda, and we did impose our way of doing things, but not only on a practical, tactical level of, like, you know, smashing that fence, tearing down that fence, not only as far as organizational principles goes, but also in the discourse, also in all the politics that were involved, which were clearly, I think it was the more clearly anti-capitalist and everything, then even if there's still criticism to be made, I don't think it was not genius, you know. There was still lots of liberalism into the propaganda of Clark and Keza, but it was much better than in what we're used to. That's one thing. Involvement, the involvement of anarchists into the general thing, and the fact that we succeed into winning the argument, and, well, we were basically the organizers, and that's one thing. And the fact that we were not scared, I remember, like, a few months ago, like, people were like saying, you're totally crazy to have your days of action one day before a union. You should do it with the union. And we were like, no, we have political differences with them. You should do it with Salami, you should be united, blah, 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 blah. And we're saying, no, we have political differences with them. We think we're right, we think they're wrong. We're gonna see what happened. And we're gonna organize that way, we're gonna do it that way. That's it, that's all. And we open up a radical space, and I think we prove beyond doubt that people were not scared of radicalism, we're not scared of diversity of tactic, so that's cool. The other thing is diversity of tactic, like, I think we've probably changed lots of things in North America right now, because the dominant way of doing things was nonviolence. And now, I think with what happened this weekend would have been denounced, 6 months ago would have been denounced anywhere. And now I've seen really few denunciation, only a few, like one or two. And why there was no denunciation? Like in PEG, in Prague, denounced what happened. The DAN denounced what happened in Seattle, what happened in Washington. And why it didn't happen in Quebec City? Because we were in PEG and the DAN. We were the ones like doing this. And we will pay a heavy price for that, for sure, because we get lots of activists in deep shit right now. So that's the other thing. And the third thing is that as far as specifically anarchist things goes, NEFAC did a lot of good organizing around that, I think. And even if anything didn't work as well as we would have liked it to be, for example, we never, the United Anarchist Bloc never materialized on Sunday because we were all too involved in too many things. But at the same time, we print out a 4-page tabloid at 10,000 copies, which we distribute the whole weekend long. And that's also better than what's usually done in mass protests. This time, we were not only like waving black flags, we're actually getting to people to tell them a different message, which is important. And not being organized, we wouldn't be able to do that, for sure. We got 7 comrades from Montreal who were charged with conspiracy to commit mischief that could endanger life, and stealing of military material, and recel, you know, selling back things that you've stolen.
Fencing
military material. 7 comrades from Montreal. They were infiltrated by the police, by agents provocateurs, and they were arrested with tear gas, gas mask, baseball bats, helmets, and concussion grenade. And
you mean this is what the police used against them when they were arrested? Or?
This is what they say they found. I don't know if that was true.
Okay.
And that's what they shown on television. And 7 of them are in jail with charges that are really serious, actually. It's, and they're going to be in court Monday. And one of the members of Emile Henry was also... They were arrested last week. And one of the members of Emile Henry was arrested Friday with... they say they found... baseball bat, I think, and hockey equipment, but I'm not sure what they found exactly, and I'm not even sure what he will be accused of, charged with, because we've heard both conspiracy to commit mischief, and also carrying of a weapon, and so he's also in deep shit, and we are, by the way, because the name of the group was named in police report. And there's also Jaggi Singh, which is in deep shit. He was arrested, well, kidnapped, Friday on Saint-Jean Street in Army, actually. And he's charged with participating in a riot and carrying an illegal weapon. So that's it. The illegal weapon was a catapult that was throwing teddy bears at the police. And he wasn't even carrying in it, like it was 2 meter high, and it was just near it. But he was arrested like hours later. And so that's it. And there's a bunch of our comrades who disappeared. I think they go on holidays, but they could also be at the, somewhere in jail. We just don't know. They were named in police report as one of the cells of the red zone. I think, well, yeah, 4 or 5. 3 from Quebec, 2 from Montreal, something like that. And there's 3 people from NIFAC in Boston that are in jail right now. Yeah, so that's it. And 450 people in jail, with probably lots of locals. I don't know exactly. Among the organizers, there's not many people in jail right now, but some of the founding members are. And there's
450 in jail. Okay, that's a much higher number than we heard today at the clock demonstration. Are they learning now of more people that have been taken in?
Yeah, there was kidnapping in the street uptown this afternoon. And it was like 3 kidnapping of black blockers, and there was another. There was lots of arrest this morning. It was 436 this morning, and it rose to 450 something. And also, we don't know. Like they could also like arrest other people. That's still possible. Like we've heard rumors of of people being arrested. And also we know for sure that three members of Immunavi were visited by CSIS in the weeks prior to the days of action, me, and two other girls. And there was another member of NIFAC visited in Montreal, and two other CLAC members. And so that's a bit frightening too. Well, CSIS is like the Canadian version of CIA, and so FBI, and some of us were arrested a lot of time before the action. I was arrested like two times the week before with different people. Well, as soon as it was with people, they didn't know. They just arrest us for anything to get the names. And so that's another thing. And there was, and apparently, according to people from the local welfare right union who know people who work at the police station, there's at least my picture and the picture of another member of the Comité Populaire, which is also an anarchist. There's a huge space with the pictures of all activists in the police station, and there's my picture and the picture of the other worker at the Comité Populaire.
That was Nicholas, activist with the Anti-Capitalist Convergence in Quebec.
The rangers and deputies are hired by the rich man.
To donate to the legal defense of protesters arrested in Quebec City, please visit the Unwelcome Guests website, where we have listed the address where donations can be sent.
If you have an event you'd like us to announce or an issue you'd like us to cover on the program, you can contact us at our website at www.radioforall.org/unwelcome. That's radio, the number 4, ALL.org/unwelcome. Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Unwelcome Guests is produced by Chris Sturr, Jesse Lind, Lynn Gary, and Sean Ewald. We are solely responsible for its content.
By unwelcome travelers.